Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Moon, Moo, and You, the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving-Schenk, and Joan Adams and I host the show. But Joan is away this evening. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. My guest this evening is astrology's astrologer, Sheila Audette. My homework assignment for tonight's show was to go to the movies last night and see Alice in Wonderland. Sheila will do Johnny Depp's chart interpretation this evening, as well as explain how she uses story and fairy tales to do an astrological chart for a child. Joining me now is Sheila Audette.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Here I am. So you did your homework. What did you think?
Well, it was a great movie because I can tell how it affected me afterwards, where you can see a movie and sort of get into it, and then it, you know, you get into other things, and you never really think about it too much again. But this one really got into my head, and when I was dreaming, it just seemed like my dreams were totally different. And I thought it was really a fantastic movie because of the way it has gone on in my mind.
Great. Okay, well, for me, you know, the two movies that have come out are right kind of back-to-back, were Avatar and Alice in Wonderland. And I don't go into a movie experience for me because I'm from the theater and I've worked in movies. For me are like a holy experience. They're like a sacred thing. And then I agree with you, Kate, 100%. If a movie leaves you thinking for days and weeks later, then it's a process that has extended you into almost another way of thinking.
Right.
So I was very, you know, and I don't only do children's charts of fairy tales. I do adult charts, too.
Okay.
Because, or with myths. Or sometimes I use Man of La Mancha, or sometimes, you know, I'll use any, you can use to do a chart opera or a painting or, you know, anything really, because a chart really is an artistic process. Now, when I'm talking about that, I look at Johnny Depp's chart, which I said I would speak about tonight in relationship to Alice in Wonderland. Johnny Depp has something, a chart usually has a yod in it, some charts. A lot of charts don't, but some charts have one yod and some charts have two yods. And they are 150-degree angles that look like something that points to something with a sextile joining them at the other end. So they look like a long pointed, like an arrow.
Yeah.
Like an Indian arrow, they're like a pointer in a chart.
Right.
So when you see one of them, it really means that somebody has been distinctly born to do a certain road. And if they get off that road, the inconjuncts are something that makes them feel really uncomfortable. And it kind of leads them back into the road that they were supposed to be. Or do, whatever that sentence meant. Anyway, I see one or two, and sometimes I see three. But the thing about Johnny Depp is he has five.
Wow.
There's five yods in his chart, five fingers of God, a five-pointed star that when you hold it up, it's just this gorgeous star. And he is, when you look at the sign of Gemini, okay, Gemini, if you're an actor, can be anybody. Can, you know, the Gemini can be one thing, or it can be another thing, or it can be, it looks like, you know, it has two bars on the side with two bars, one on top and one on the bottom. So whatever school he walks into, he can morphogenically be in that field. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if people remembered him doing, I don't know if you've seen Edward Scissorhands.
Well, yeah, I saw that one, yeah.
It was where, you know, and the depth of that also in that movie was that he was created, but then then the man died before he created his hands.
Mm-hmm.
So his hands were scissors. And everything he touched, he cut. And he lived alone in the darkness until one day a lady found him and brought him home to the family. And so he was thrust into this world of living alone, almost this dream world, thrust back into a regular family. And, of course, he ran around and cut all the bushes into figures, you know.
Yeah.
But those are the kind of parts that Johnny Depp plays.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this Gemini quality about him. He also never looks at his work. So,
I saw that today, yeah. I saw
yes.
that.
It's all about the process. It's all about the experience of doing the process and being in the process. He doesn't even look at takes, everyday outtakes. And,
right.
And I don't think, you know, other actors say, I don't like to look at myself. And he kind of said that in the little promo thing, but I just think he wants to let the character there, and he moves on to the Gemini-ness of the next character, and so he lets one character. It's like you do a show when you're in the business, and you're so into that show, and it's your whole life. And for weeks, when I'm doing doing a show, you know, you're into that. You're into the actors. You're into the costumes. You're into the lighting. You're into every single thing in that show. And then, if you work in the summer stock in the summer, you're into it. You're into it. You're into it. And then you learn very early that you have to leave that. And you have to leave that back there because you have something new to do. So that's really a big thing with Depp. But I thought the interesting thing, he's a Gemini. And when he was about, 10, 11, about 12 years old, his son moved into Cancer. So then, now that's called a progression. And the son moves a degree a year, okay? That still means that you're your basic sun sign, but it's almost like you have moved into a new place. It's like you take yourself and you move to China, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the sun in Gemini, the next sign next to it is Cancer. So it means if you're born at 0 degrees of Gemini, it would take, if the sun moved by progression a degree every year, it would take you 30 years till you got all the way through Gemini and go to Cancer. But he was born at 18 degrees of the sign. Okay, so it only took him 12 years, and then he moved into Cancer. And then he was in Cancer for 30 years. Okay? So... not exactly 30 years. Yeah, 30 years. Okay. So then his son, when he gets to a certain point, will move into Leo. So his son, on May the 28th, 2007, moved out of Cancer and into Leo. Now, you know, it's very interesting because when his son moves into Leo, into the 12th house, we're almost talking about doing a movie like Alice in Wonderland, because the 12th house is the house of mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 12th house, and you look at the original chart, and you go, Uranus, Mars, Pluto, all of this is rising. He has Leo on the ascendant, and in the second house, how he creates experiences is through a million characters, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Some Uranian, some Martian, some very Plutonic, very deep. He also played Dellinger, I guess, this year too, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's a very Plutonic role. It's a very deep Plutonic role. So you look at this, and he has Mercury conjunct Venus in Taurus, which means at a very, he's almost stubborn when he's doing a part, to give it its own character and its own voice.
Yeah.
So if you look at the pirates, you see him in this almost, this one with the gold tooth, and then you see him in Scissor's Hand. He has the white face with the Scissor's Hand. Then you see him in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and he's almost removed from everybody in that.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you can't get near him. And then in Wonderland, he brings the Mad Hatter, but there's no seepage from one to the other. They're all very different. They're all, he uses different parts of his yacht or different parts of the star in his chart to go to different characters. And when he does that, he is only focused on that one yacht. I think that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And probably if you did research into every time he did a film, probably if you did all his films and researched them and progressed his chart, you would see that the one was pointing to the sun and one was pointing to the moon and one was pointing to Jupiter and one is pointing to the ascendant. You would see that in every single movie he made.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the movie Alice in Wonderland, when I look at Alice in Wonderland, it's like everybody's chart. In other words, you can look at Alice in Wonderland and you're looking at an astrological chart. And I love movies like that because in the very beginning, she's there in bed and she comes and says to her father, "Can I talk to you?" Of course, and he does. And the line is, "Dad, am I bonkers?" And he said, "Yes." And she said, "Oh." And he said, "Only the best people are."
Right.
So right away, you have this whole feeling of being outside the norm, which, you know, outside the norm is very interesting because today I was reading, and everybody should get it, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Future, which is Michael J. Fox's new book, and he talks about education, and he said it's funny that people talk about education as only in, that it only can be done literally in school or in college. He said, we all get educated, but it's just in different ways. There's no way you could not be educated. So he talks about well-known people that have not graduated from high school, which are Leonardo DiCaprio, Johnny Depp, Robert De Niro, Chris Rock, Kevin Bacon, John Travolta, Hilary Swank, Jim Carrey, Charlie Sheen, Sean Connery, Al Pacino, Quentin Tarantino. This is really going to get you. Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein, and Benjamin Franklin.
And Kitty Loving Shank.
Right. And Kitty Loving Shank. So the education is outside the school system. But I often, in working with charts of people that haven't gone to college or haven't, I worked with a computer genius today. I worked with him for about 3 hours, who is outside the system, okay? It seems that there always is an internal thing inside for information. Don't you find that? They never graduate from school.
Right.
It's always this internal, oh, wow, this internal, oh, my gosh, yes, I want to get that book. Yes, I want to read that. Let me look at that. They don't become solidified into knowledge, ancient knowledge. They use it, but they're always looking for new ways to do things, like this guy today I worked with, who, of course, was a Gemini, right? So let's go. I got off subject, didn't I? Hey, host, you're supposed to keep me on subject.
Well, my favorite Johnny Depp movie is Don Juan DeMarco.
Oh, my God. How wonderful. Brando was in that, wasn't he?
Yep, and Faye Dunaway.
Yeah.
One of the best movies ever made, period.
And what's the one he did about chocolate?
Well, I never saw that. You have to understand, I'm not a real Johnny Depp fan, but that one was really one of my favorite movies of all time. And
why?
And one time, because it has to do with the fine line between insanity and sanity,
mm-hmm.
which is real. And the same, it seems like, even though, like you said, and Johnny Depp does make I did do a little research today on him, and he does make a big deal out of not being anything the same from one part to the other, just like you said. But he was there was that same theme, though, like the Alice in Wonderland. The Mad Hatter was somewhat insane, but then he wasn't.
Well,
he really wasn't. I mean, it's just everybody down there in Wonderland was fairly unconventional and eccentric.
And I want to ask you, Kate, have you not met all of them?
Sure. Yeah.
You have met all of them. They were exaggerated in character, but you really have met all of them in your life.
Right, every single one.
Do you know why his hair is red? His hair is red because it's Mercury, because he's a hatter. And
he
has worked with hats. So the under his eyes is red, and his hair stands out and is bright red because his hair has turned red because of the mercurial effect on him. But then the mercurial effect on him is the band around the red hat, is that the hat is the mind. The hat emphasizes the tricky mind.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking at the first house in any chart and you go, for me, the first house, the way I describe the first house, I don't know about other astrologers, but the way I describe it, it's either you're a victim or a hero. You either do it or you don't, okay? You either get it or you don't get it. And in 5 minutes when somebody sits down in the chair and you look at their chart, they start with their first house. They'll start with a victim story. Or they'll start with a survivor hero story. I have overcome, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I've overcome being molested, or I've overcome. So they're not in the victim story. Now, the victim story, the first house goes into the second house. The first house, of course, let's do it, it's opposite the seventh house. So you see in Johnny Depp's first house that he has Uranus, Mars, and Virgo, okay? And that really means, and the seventh house, Saturn in Aquarius, saves him. Because if it would not have been for the actions of River Phoenix, he may have gone that path, because he was on that path. He was on the path of, you know, going into addiction. And they all hung out at the Phoenix Club, and they all, you know. But there was a sudden death, okay? Uranus, Mars in Virgo.
Yeah.
And death does tell the story if you hear him. And it was on, what's the name of the guy that sits around the round table? I can't think of his name right now. It's one of the best interviews of death I've ever seen. And he did one of the best interviews of Robert Downey Jr. I've ever. Charlie Rose, is that his name?
Oh, yeah.
He said that I stopped right there. That was the wall, okay? That was the wall of, okay, that's not the way I'm going. Now, it took Robert Downey Jr. a longer period of time to hit that wall, a lot longer, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But when you have the first to the seventh, it's the way this first house shows you how people look at you, okay? What your relationship to the other people are. And a lot of victims say, oh, my God, somebody's done this to me. But in reality, they've created it. They create the victim thing by the story they tell.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the seventh house, they go, oh, my God, why do people really always do this to me? To accept the reality is that they created it to learn something. And when they change their perception of the reality and change it to the hero or the survivor, it changes.
Mm-hmm.
The second house is how you create the experience. Now, Johnny Depp has Pluto, and he has a lot of asteroids in there. But Pluto in Virgo means it's a whole generational thing, Pluto in Virgo, you know, because it moves so slow. But I'm not going into that. But the Pluto in Virgo generation is like plutonically, mentally, physically, emotionally, and the glyph turns in spiritually. There's a lot of things. That's what Virgo is. There's a lot of criticism and a lot of criteria and also a lot of know-it-all stuff. So it's pretty verbose a lot of times, the plutonic energy in Virgo. And so you look across in Johnny Depp's, and he has the key, which is Chiron and Pisces in the eighth house. Now, the way you create your experience is the way you teach people how to treat you, which is the eighth house. You teach people exactly how to treat you. Now, the third house, I find this fascinating in depth chart because he has no planets in the third house, and he's an actor. And the actor is how you give your story words. So he does
right.
not have any planets in that house. So then you begin to look for Venus, and you find Venus conjunct Mercury in Taurus in the 10th. Now, the 10th house is if you build it, they will come. If you do it, if you give it a voice, but it's a higher way of telling it. A lot of his stuff, the one you described, was in body and physical, okay? But a lot of his pieces are very mythical, very fairy tale, very imaginative. In that,
especially in the later ones.
Yeah.
That was relatively early, that Don Juan DeMarco.
Yeah. And then the fourth house is feeling the feelings. You have to acknowledge something in order to change it. So if you're working, if you're a victim and you're creating the experience of victim, you know, everybody goes, victims are really hurting all the time, but they're not. The minute of working with over and over with them, as soon as they get to it, they go away from it. Oh, I don't want to talk about that. Oh, I don't want to. And you know, addiction too. Oh, no. You know, there's a lot of denial around it. It really hurt and it really happened, and I'll tell you, but I don't want to explore it. It's a better way to put it. I don't want to explore it. I don't want to really go into the feelings. Unless they go into those feelings, they can't come out. I was at a funeral of the girl that died, and I won't say any names, but the husband who had been abusive in many ways was not supposed to come in the church, but he came in and he talked out loud, and I saw her mother up to that point she had been holding this mask up. And she was right beside me across the aisle, and she just crumbled. And I said inside myself, even though it looked negative, he did her a favor. Because he made her go to that part where it cracked the seed, it cracked the shell, and it opened up the feelings, and they all came out. And that's what the fourth house is about. What is in the fourth house is what we won't acknowledge and what we hide and where we don't feel the feelings totally.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you go up to the classroom at the 10th house, if you feel the feelings and if you go in, and Johnny has Mercury Venus in the 10th, it means then you can come out and tell the stories and be an observer in some ways. He's in the stories, but when he's done with them, he doesn't even become an observer though. He doesn't want to see them. However, in the interview with Charlie Rose, he has seen most of Edward Scissorhands, which is interesting.
Yeah.
He said more than any other movie, he's seen more of that than any other, which is a really deep movie. I bought it for my 8-year-old for Easter, and my grandchild, and he said, this is just so good.
It was
just really. Now the fifth house is after you feel the feelings, then the fifth house is about collapsing energy. It's about collapsing the energy that holds in the victim story. It's about collapsing the story, collapsing that energy, so it just folds, and you no longer have that negative energy around you. It's part of the thing of when you're going to, a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and over you redundantly tell the story. Each time you tell that story, you are creating an experience and more energy around it. If you tell the story and you create the experience, that's why processing, actual physical processing in workshops and stuff is the best way to do it. Another great way that I do it is have them write a story, their victim story, and then they don't go into the scene. Somebody else does, and they watch it.
Wow,
and
yeah.
When they watch themselves as an observer, they go, oh, my God, am I really doing that? Oh, my God, you know? Oh, my God, that's crazy, because they're outside of it. So if you feel the feelings and you change and you crack the energy in the fifth house, then you can go to the 11th house And the 11th house is about anything that you do, you can, anything that you want to do, you can do. It's the one and the many and the many and the one. It's about, you think, you know, a lot of these housewives and people that are on Oprah Winfrey, they really are like, oh, I'm just a housewife or I'm just at home. But they have created these people that have, some of them have become millionaires, you know,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, and the other thing is, you know, Kate Gosselin is getting a lot of crap. But Kate Gosselin really, she's raising 8 children, and just because this is a creative art process, this Dancing with the Stars, she can't dance. I mean, I have to say that. But I just give her kudos for even trying it, okay?
Sure.
But how in the world can he come in and say, now I want my kids back because she's not taking care of them? She is taking care of them more than if she had a regular everyday job. She is with them more than a 9-to-5 job. And if she was a regular housewife, she probably had to have 2 jobs to keep 8 kids.
Well, I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Who wants a regular job anyway? Better go ahead.
Well, some people better hold them down, okay?
Yeah. But, you know, let's think outside the box. Let's use our imagination and try to realize that there's other ways of, you know, surviving and making money and actually thriving.
Yes.
So go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So the 6th house is your perception of reality. Once you break the energy and change the story, then you come in from a whole different way, angle. That's the 6th house. It's perception of reality. What Johnny Depp does, it's very interesting because he has his moon in Capricorn and his south node in Capricorn in the 6th house. What he does with every movie he does is break the perception of reality.
Mm-hmm.
He breaks
yeah.
it. And then it's a whole, and once you break it, once you break the energy, collapse the energy, and anybody can work on this at home, even if they don't have their chart, they go, how many times a day am I telling this story? Not even if you're not telling it out loud, if you're just thinking it. You keep creating energy around the victim. You keep creating that energy over and over again, and somehow it's working for you. Now, Alice was not like that. When he proposed to her, she had heard a lot of victim stories there. The victim story, she saw that the her sister's husband was cheating on her, right? Saw the woman that was telling the story of the way her husband left her. She was hearing all of these victim stories, and then she got up to be proposed to the 1st house, and she said, give me a moment. Now, that moment was the moment that she ran off and went down the rabbit hole. Now, her quest, her thing in the rabbit hole was, all of it was to solve the problem of whether she was going to be a victim to this aristocratic society, whether she was going to go, and she now knew they were all victims. He was saying, you have to marry me, and then you can't talk, and you can't do this. And you know, well, that wouldn't have lasted 5 minutes anyway with the character. But still, she went down the rabbit hole into, and it wasn't Wonderland, it was Underland.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what happens is the water that is represented in the original fairy tale is the water is the emotions, the up and down of the emotions, the big and little of the emotions in that room. And her balancing it out, and her figuring it out in a Gemini kind of way. If I eat this, I'll grow big. If I only, you know, if I do this, I'll get small. How, in Libra-ly, can I balance that out? And then she balanced it out, and she went through the door. So that was the first step of the hero on, and then, basically, we'll skip to the part where she meets Johnny, who is the Mad Hatter. Who is the mind? I mean, he really represents the mind, whether it's crazy, whether it's sane. And he runs across that table, and he goes, oh, Alice, you're back. And then he goes, but you've lost your muchness. Big line. You're
mm-hmm.
not much. Meaning she is some way fooling around with her victim side, and she has lost the muchness of who she is, which is her bonkers side in some way. Right?
And it's also her hero side.
Yes, good.
Heroine, yeah.
And the hero side. So basically, we see, we know the Red Queen is running the land, and the Great Line, and that is, are you going to rule through fear, or are you going to rule through love? And mm-hmm. ruling through fear does not work, okay? But still
never.
Still in all, it comes to the point where the Mad Hatter sacrifices and gets taken, and she gets small and under the hat, okay?
Yeah.
And she sits under the hat. Now, the hat, representing the mind, is I'm again going under the hat and into my mind and meditating or whatever you do in there. Which way am I going to do? What am I going to do? Am I going to go back to the victim, or am I going to go forward into whatever the trial? So the dog picks up the hat, right?
Yeah.
And she says, she gets on the dog and she said, let's go for the kingdom where the Red Queen lives. And he, and she said a very important thing there. I just loved it. Don't forget the hat. In saying don't forget the hat, she meant don't forget the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what we're working on. Now, the Cheshire Cat coming in and going out, that basically is about you can't trust the other side. Because the other side will give you hints. The other side is always talks in riddles, just like
mm-hmm.
Yoda in Star Wars. And,
yeah.
the Cheshire Cat coming in and going out is that whole thing about, you know, one day you'll remember, you know, this is to teach you about power. And if I give you the answer, you're not going to get powerful. So it's just kind of give you a hint of where you're going to go. So she gets on the dog and rides into the kingdom, and right away she rescues the little thing that the woman is using to play croquet. What kind of animal was that? I forget. Is it a porcupine or a hamster?
It was a porcupine.
A porcupine. So she rescues, but then the rabbit comes in and she says, I need to eat the cake, because in this kingdom, she needed to be big. She needed to be bigger than the queen. She needed
yeah.
to have that power of bigness for the queen to even look at her. I
yeah.
loved when the queen called her Ugg, okay?
You know what? That queen was an exceptional actress.
Helen Bonham Carter is one of the best actresses of our time.
She was really good, yeah.
She is every film I have ever seen her in. She's married to Tim Burton, you know. And
oh, okay, yeah.
And they're it's like a match made, I don't know where, but that's a perfect match, okay?
Yeah.
And she gets very big, and then she said she needs clothes. Now, the thing about the original fairy tale is she wore the white apron the whole time.
Yeah.
But Tim Burton used the clothes as an emotional change.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting because there's a movie called The Cook, The Thief, The Wife, and Her Lover. I guess you've never seen that movie.
No.
Well, that's a movie you should see. That's one of the best-made movies of all time. And every scene in that movie, it's a really intense movie. It's Helen Mirren made that movie. And in the one scene, everything's green. In another scene, everything's white.
Mm-hmm.
And another
uh-huh.
scene, everything's red. It goes with the emotions. And
uh-huh.
I love the red because the red dress is action. That's Mars. That means
yeah.
action. That means I'm going to take action. But she's still, in creating her experience in the second house, she's riding toward it, not away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the time she is giving it words. She is giving it words. She is talking. And the Hatter is very interesting. I loved one of the lines that he said with the queen in order to get in with the queen. He said, I'd love to hat that big head. I'd love to had it. So he worked on the vanity of the queen to make hats for her, and
yeah.
he got himself unchained. I mean, it was all about a big game of chess or a big, you know, all of that stuff that went on there. He was very tricky, very tricky. And then when his Mars would go off, his Mars Uranus, he would go insane, and then somebody would go, Hatter. And he would go, I'm fine. I'm just fine.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
he could pull himself right out of it. But, you know, she went in there, And then she, the other character, the one that lost the eye, that originally in the very beginning of the movie, the little mouse took its eye, or she took its eye, somebody took its eye, I don't quite remember.
I love that creature, too. What a wonderful creature.
But she looked at that creature and used the strategy of compassion. Instead of using the strategy of going to war with that creature, she went back to find the mouse and asked for the eye.
Yeah.
Got the eye, had somebody go get the eye, and then she rolled the eye to the creature, and that was a total act of compassion. That was really a beautiful moment.
Oh, I liked it, yeah.
And then the creature left her have Excalibur, which is what I call Excalibur. It's just like King Arthur, because she is, it's like the fairy tale King Arthur, because nobody else could wield the sword. Nobody else could use that sword but her. Even if the queen didn't know what to do with that sword,
mm-hmm.
just hid the sword, you know. And, but Alice had the scroll and knew what to do with the sword, so that was okay. The whole time, then she's down. She is feeling the feelings, but she is going to action. She's working on collapsing the energy. She's working on collapsing. The only way she can collapse the energy is by killing the Jabberwocky. Right?
Yep.
Killing the Jabberwocky at the end. So we all have our Jabberwockies. We all have that. But, you know, when she rode, and the White Queen was almost too yucky. I loved her, Hathaway, because she used her hands. Tim Burton has a way in his movie that he directs his act, and the way Helen Bonham Carter used her hands, too. It's that whole hand thing, you know. They get it through the hands. They get it through the back. They get all that actorially, physically. And Johnny Depp always creates a walk. That little walk with his toes turned in, that little humbling walk. You know, when he sat him in the prison cell with that light down on him, that was one of the most beautiful things in the movie. And then the Cheshire Cat came to him.
Yes.
Cheshire Cat then would not tell him exactly what he was going to do. The Cheshire Hat said, give me the hat, and you got to trust me. Give me the hat, right? So, of course, the Cheshire Cat then changed into him, and when the head was chopped off, he couldn't chop the Cheshire Hat's head off because he was only a head. He just went in the hat. And that's where the whole thing started to turn around. There's an interesting moment there that we all look in our lives, and we have to look at it around people that we're changing ourselves so that they're more comfortable. When he looked out from behind the throne of the Red Queen and pulled the nose off of somebody and the ear off of somebody, he said, you're all adding things, making yourself bigger in some way so that you fit into this environment. And he started pulling all this stuff off. I thought, we either cut parts of ourselves off or add parts of ourselves to make ourselves comfortable around somebody that who is really the villain in some ways.
Yeah.
So anyway, the whole thing in it, when then I thought one of the most beautiful parts of the movie was in the end, right before when all the people were lined up in front, Tim Burton lined them up exactly like the people in the beginning who wanted her to marry the guy and be a victim. He did the same scene over again. But this scene, the people that were in front of her wanted her to take her power. And that scene, they wanted her to be a victim, the first scene.
Yes.
So she chose power. She chose power, and that's what. And she chose using Excalibur, and she chose chopping off the head of the Jabberwocky. I'm telling the end of the movie for people who haven't seen it, but hey. The thing was, when he asked her to stay, she couldn't stay because she had to bring this back into her life. And when she came back to the wedding and she said, no, I can't marry you, she went along to each one of the victim stories and told them to knock it off. I love that.
Yeah.
If you cheat, if you do one more cheating on my sister, I'm going to tell. Get a therapist and pull yourself out of it, she said to the older woman. You know, and she walked along to every victim and told them to be a hero. And then when the uncle said, you haven't said anything to me, she said, I have something to say to you. And that's when she took, and we haven't talked about Absalom, who is the caterpillar. The caterpillar was the other magical being. And I loved, was weaving his chrysalis.
Yes. That was
Wasn't that the most beautiful thing?
Yeah.
That you have to be in total transformation. You have to totally feel the feelings. You have to totally transform in order to live your full life.
Mm-hmm.
Transformation, transcendence, whatever kind of trance it is, you have the magic of that is to pull yourself out of it and transform. And then when she said she wanted to go to China, and then the butterfly was in front of her on the boat, which she mm-hmm. said, hi, Absalom, for people who didn't get it, you know?
Yeah.
So that meant that he had come from that life into this life.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a guide.
With her. Yeah, he came with her. He came with her to do that.
Yes. He was her angel. He was her guardian. He was all of those things. I went with an artist friend. She was the artistic designer for the state of Pennsylvania. I went to Harrisburg. I saw it twice in Harrisburg at the IMAX.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a wonderful thing is to have Johnny Depp in IMAX and 3D sitting right in your lap, Kate. Oh, God. I never wanted to leave. But she said, do you think that they're going to make a sequel and he'll meet her in China? I thought that was, she was carrying it forward.
That's funny.
Yeah, well, she said, after all, if Absalom's back, then Johnny Depp could, the Mad Hatter could meet her in China, you know?
Right.
Which was quite beautiful. So when you're working with a chart like that fairy tale or another fairy tale, it means that you can say once upon a time, once upon a time. And I worked with a 10-year-old on Sunday, a 10-year-old and a 15-year-old sisters who had seen, the 10-year-old had seen the movie, and she came in, and I have Johnny Depp, I got the movie poster, it's in the corner here. And she looked at me, you know, and she went, okay, you're okay. And we indeed worked on, we did, they were younger, and I did work with a fairy tale with them. And they did, it was extremely helpful to get them into a fairy tale. And you can say to a client, what is your favorite myth? What is your favorite fairy tale?
Mm-hmm.
And the fairy tale or the myth that they give you will be the one, is the way they run their life. If they say Cinderella, you know, you work on the fact that why, and then they start to tell you their life story. And why are they staying in the kitchen? And why are they not taking their throne that they should take?
Right.
Why are they letting, you know, people over them? Snow White, why are you asleep? You know, I worked with somebody, you know, I guess it was a week ago. They all run together, but she got her period when she was 9, and the hormones flipped her out, and they put her on medication, really high-powered medication. And when she was 16, she took herself off of it. And I said to her, that's almost like Snow White.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
know? That's you know, it's that whole thing of medicating yourself and putting yourself to sleep for a certain period of time because you don't want to deal with it. And then at a certain time you say, because if you're on this powerful medication, why is she totally addicted, Kate? You're a nurse.
Well,
how could she just pulled herself off of it.
Don't you hear the latest information about antidepressants? They don't work, but if you try to get off of them, it could kill you.
Yeah. Well, this child, nobody knew she was going off of them. And she took herself off, which was extremely dangerous, you know?
Well, kudos to her.
Yeah, kudos to her.
She's young and she can handle it.
Well, she did. She's 22 now. But she did handle it. But the thing is in telling the story or telling the fairy tale, when you look at the sleeping fairy tales, if you say, they did it to me, there is 5 chapters. And the first chapter is, I walk down the street and I fall into a hole, and I don't know how to get out of it. I'm just a victim. And the second chapter is I walk down the street and fall in the same hole. Now it's your fault I'm in the hole. The third chapter is I walk down the street, I fall in the hole, and it's my fault I'm in the hole, and I will get out of it. The third chapter is the observational chapter. I walk down the street and I look at the hole. I then come and observe it from outside. I do not fall into it. And the last chapter is I walk down a different street. So you're out of it. So when you take absolute responsibility for the test that you set up in your life, it's a whole different perception of reality at looking at your chart or anything else. That they didn't do it to me, no matter how horrendous it is. If indeed you say, from that experience, I've learned something big and I can help somebody else out and make their experience less horrendous, that's what it was for.
Right.
That's my my theory. So, I loved the movie. Okay. I gave it 4 stars. In fact, I gave it 10 stars.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I agree, totally. I hope somebody around here wants to go so I can go again.
I loved it. A Zen master once asked where he would like to go after he died. And you know what he replied?
No.
To hell, for that's where the help is needed most.
Right, I did read that. That's good. That's good.
And that is if we are in a place where everything is perfect and everything is beautiful, why do we come to this planet? And when somebody says, I'm gonna die and go to hell, you go, well, what are you in?
Because
they're telling you a horrendous story, right? They don't have to be in hell. But if they're telling you a horrendous story and how horrible it is, their choice is to look at it as being in hell, you know?
Right.
The other quote
Go ahead.
Go on. No, you go.
I was just really curious about when you work with children, and a lot of times parents will come to you, won't they, wondering what the charts are like for their children. But it sounds like you actually work with the children themselves about their charts.
I
think that's pretty interesting. I bet a lot of astrologers don't do that.
But I do believe that if I do work with a child, I say to them, you've chosen to get your chart done at 10 years old. For me, anybody that I have, that I do work for, I think it is when they were up there, they've chosen me as their astrologer at this point in time.
Right.
Because, they're very odd ways that people get to me, or any other astrologer, or any other counselor, or any other whatever. I think they choose the people right there to give them. And if I said, I said to the 10-year-old, if I just say Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck here, it's okay, because in this moment, we have opened the vortex of your chart. And if you're 10 or 15, or the little girl I worked with from Australia, I find in other countries, I've done charts in Europe for children. And it's interesting, if I do charts in America for children, it's like what you said. The parents want to know about the chart, so they listen to the chart. If I do charts in Europe, I talk to the parent, and I said, well, what did you think? And this mother said, I didn't hear it. I gave it to him.
And
so they, and if he wants me to hear it, he'll let me hear it. But if he doesn't want to let me to hear it, he or she, then it's none of my business. So it's a whole different concept about astrology in Europe and China and Australia and all those other places than it is in America. We are much more, let's say, in control here in some ways of the experience than I find when I do charts from other countries. Yes, I do work with children.
Do you think maybe Americans are just more uptight?
They also said
more controlling.
Well, it was interesting because Joanne, my business partner here and all, walked out with a 10-year-old, and she said, did you understand that? And the 10-year-old said every word. Now, and she said, yeah. And she said, did you understand the language? It's a symbolic language. She said every word.
Wonderful.
But a lot of the adults will say, astrology is too hard and it's too confusing.
Well, it's because they don't understand it. They, you know, so many adults have removed themselves from the imaginary world and
mm-hmm.
from the world of symbols so that they actually believe that they don't have an imagination. I hear so many adults say, I don't have any creativity, because mm-hmm. they have not allowed themselves to have a creative life. They think, well, if I have a job, or you know, if I'm raising these children, or if I'm doing this, I don't have any time to do this or do that. And that's very reasonable why, probably the reason why they really don't understand the charts that they're being told about.
So they're not conscious.
Yeah, I mean.
They're really unconscious because, you know.
Yeah, I know that I personally decided a few years ago that I was just going to live a more creative life as opposed to a more practical life. Or, you know, more going to the job and just doing this.
Yeah,
and
right.
That. I mean,
how'd that work for you?
Very well.
Oh, you're one of the most creative people I know.
Oh, well, thank you.
And the most imaginative. Okay, come on. So wherever, even if you would be going into a 9-to-5 job and say you were doing that, you would still be imaginative even in that environment.
Yeah, that's true, but.
And you're in, and I call you a bridge because you stretch people.
Yeah.
So no matter where you are, you would stretch people into a different way of imagining and thinking and creating, no matter what.
Well, I must say, I wish I had 5 yards. Like Johnny Depp does.
And with Johnny Depp's job, he needs 5 yards, okay?
That's true.
I mean, he's really taken on the mass. I mean, he has the Leo ascendant, of course, which means he's taken on. And, you know, as when you saw him there with David Letterman, he is so quick. He is so, you know, it's just really quick the way he comes out with an answer, that Gemini quickness. It's,
what year was he born? What year?
Johnny Depp was born in 1963.
Ah. So he's even younger than I thought he was.
Yeah,
another thing is, yeah,
June 9th, Sunday, June the 9th, 1963, at 8:45 a.m. in
same
Kentucky.
The same day as my father, June the 9th.
Yes, he's born in Kentucky.
You know, he has a very significant amount of Cherokee Indian in his lineage.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, what is Indian? But we came here and tried to take all the imagination and curiosity and spirituality out of the Indian culture. We worked on that.
Yeah. Well, I think he actually seems to operate from his American Indian vantage point. I mean, once I realized that he has that American Indian lineage, I could see that he operates completely differently than most actors do. So many
right.
of them are totally egocentric and they're all constantly talking about themselves, and he basically just goes and hangs out and answers questions, and he
mm-hmm.
barely says very much at all. So,
I think Robert Downey Jr. is the same. I think one of the best things that Downey ever did was Charlie Chaplin.
Yes.
It was just an incredible, incredible, incredible job that he did there with Chaplin. But, I mean, his work is really beautiful, too. Robert Downey Jr. Puts a lot bigger mask up than Johnny Depp in an interview, though.
Yeah.
And Charlie Rose also got behind the mask with Robert Downey. And a lot of stuff came out. He was talking about prison and his time in prison, and he used that as an educational thing for characters, and found out that he could fit in really well if he told jokes and really entertained prisoners. But he said in every environment, he took it just like doing a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Really just actors are very, you know, very interesting people. Because they're here to tell the story.
Yeah.
They're here to take you to a place, and when you're in a film, and like you just said, you know, I remember Agnes of God.
Mm-hmm.
That's the story I told about Kitty Loving Shank the other time, where I didn't sit with her and she showed up at the door. But I saw the show on Broadway, and
mm-hmm.
Agnes of God is the psychiatrist really goes in and tries to just say her story's not true and she couldn't have been pregnant, et cetera, you know, not over and over, all this stuff.
Yeah.
But on the stage, she says at the end, it's up to you whether I did the right thing or not.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not do that in the movie. They put closure on it in the movie,
mm-hmm.
which means for me, the play, the way they did the play was much better. Also, Equus, when I saw Equus, the ending again, it was the same kind of thing. The boy was crazy and he took the eyes out of the horses, but it was the psychiatrist in the end says, you know, I really think that I was in over my head, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it lets you go out and think, really think for days and weeks about it, where a lot of our movies have to have closure at the end, you know?
Yes, yes.
But the player in the movie that keeps going is the one that's just really things that lead us as bridges to different places.
Right, and those are the ones that get into your actual sleeping dreams. Because there is that ongoingness, yeah.
And they're teaching.
True.
They're teaching vehicles. They are sacred places.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what I truly believe.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we really got off on theater tonight, didn't we? Okay.
Well, you couldn't help it. That's just what you do.
It's in my blood. It's in my blood. Okay.
Yeah, I think that the Caribbean movies that Johnny Depp did?
Yeah, Pirates of the Caribbean.
I just couldn't get off on those movies, and that's when I sort of stopped watching his movies, because those movies just, I couldn't.
I am telling you, he came out on that boat in the beginning of that first movie, and that boat just sunk down, and he stepped off, and I couldn't stop laughing. I thought that was one of the most brilliant entrances I've ever seen in a movie. And then
yeah.
he started talking, and I was like, oh, my God, this is the first one. I just went crazy in that first movie. I thought he was just created this character with his gold tooth, and you didn't know whether he was drunk, what he was on. You know, it was, like, hysterical.
Yeah, that's true.
Who was the – oh, he took it off of Keith Richards' part. He says part of Alice in Wonderland, the Mad Hatter, is Carrot Top, that guy that performs in Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
He takes all of the – he puts, like, three of these real-life characters into a character.
Yes.
And that's just a great tool, the way he can do that. I love Pirates. I didn't like when the trilogies – you know, I didn't like the third and second. You know, I liked the first one. The only thing that I liked it going on was Lord of the Rings.
When the first
one ended in Lord of the Rings, I said, I don't want to leave here. Oh, my gosh, how soon till the next one? I just didn't want to leave. You know, it was almost sad for me.
Well, they are wonderful movies, absolutely.
Oh, I'm telling you, what's his name? I can't think of it now. You know, the horrible little creature that
Gollum.
Oh, my God. That actor should have had an Academy Award. He was just beyond scope in that film.
Well, then that same actor went and ought to play the horrible gorilla monster in a film.
Yeah. Great actor, that guy. He's just great. I mean, the way he was nice and then switched right over, and oh my God, you know, it was just, and the way he couldn't control it. And then they said because they used this new process like they used in Avatar and all with the things all over, that they couldn't give him the Academy Award because of that process. I thought,
oh
come on.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah, well, they're over that now. Take some fifth, but they're over it. Okay, Ted.
Well, Yeah, we've come to the end of this, and I appreciate your coming on, and it's been fun.
Yes.
As always.
Yes. Okay, love, light, nap. Bye, everybody.
I'm going to be playing the music for Mother and Child by C.D. Jensen in Denmark. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.